So on Talking Acoustics this time around, we have Walter Montano, who is based in Peru. From Argentina originally. And Walter has a particular interest in history in noise control, but also some experience with low frequency noise and communication with communities. So I thought we'd take this opportunity and learn a little bit about the history of acoustics and some of these other things. But I wanted to start with how you got into acoustics. And maybe explain, how would you explain what you do day to day to someone that you met at a barbecue?
When I studied in technical high school, I studied, my major was electronics and sound. From since 1985, I'm working into electroacoustic, and also I was a sound technician for live gigs. Once I was monitoring a drummer, and I didn't realize they are all kind of deaf people, and they asked me for more sound in his headphones. More. I was really afraid. I was scared about him. That occurred back in 2001. So I started to read about deafness and the high level of the sound, and I discovered the whole world of the acoustic. So in 2002, I took a specialized course in acoustics, and that started my history into the acoustic field.
Started the journey, which is an interesting journey, because you did some social sciences and humanities first, and then
in the middle.
Okay, and then architectural and building acoustics masters, but then a PhD in complex thinking and transdisciplinary with an acoustics focus. So what is that course? What does that mean?
It is not a new way to understand the philosophy or how to understand everyday problems, because it's more easily to talk about multidisciplinary studies or interdisciplinary studies. But the transdisciplinary studies, one of these roots born here in Macquarie University in Sydney.
All right.
And this is one way to study the professional of different branch of the science. They have to work together, but to transcend the borders or transcend the boundaries of their own discipline. So this is the transdisciplinary,
which is surprisingly difficult in universities, seemingly. Like, it seems to be a lot of people have their faculty and their discipline, and it's
transdisciplinary studies has about 50 years old, but is a new approach to make some solution to some specific problems. So for me, when I started to work in noise problem in acoustics, I had the opportunity to work in the Amazonian rainforest. So when I went there, I had to work with indigenous people, the Aboriginal Peruvian people. I realized that they couldn't understand, not because they are not acousticians, because the social problems, you need to a different approach. For that reason, for about around 4 years, I left my studies on acoustics, and I got a degree in social science.
Wow. So, and that was, because I've read a little bit about this, is that it was to do with a a pipeline, was it, going in through the Amazon or adjacent to the Amazon, and indigenous communities were affected by the low frequency noise from a long way away. And so that must be a difficult thing to communicate industrial noise impact to an indigenous community in the Amazon. How?
At the beginning, it was a problem, it was a trouble, because the people, the engineers, they are not acousticians, they went to the communities in the middle of the rainforest. The communities are perhaps 5 kilometers from the pump station, and they said, the noise is annoying me. And the fauna, animals, they used to catch, to eat for themselves, they went away.
Right.
Yeah. And the engineers, they went to one to a sound level meter, and they say, but the level is under 40 dBA. This is not a problem.
Yeah.
But when I went there, they say, no, no, wait a minute. This is 40 dBA. But here you have to learn more about what you are not hearing.
Yeah.
It's the low frequency. And it took me at least 3 years to realize that field and to analyze that field. Because it is not useful to find information in that situation, because it's about one only industrial source in the middle of nowhere. In this case, the Amazonian forest. And I, after 3 years, I could find the reason of their complaints, and it took me 2 years more to develop a metrics and system, and 3 years more, to develop engineering solutions.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And what was the outcome there? Was it like in terms of was that construction noise or operational
noise?
No,
operational noise.
Mm-hmm. And is that now, like, what's the resolution for that?
I don't know. I can't speak because the solution is not a public concern.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But
yep, yep.
I mean, one reason is the project, the original project, they didn't aware about the walls.
Yeah.
The pumps and the compressors are under ashrae with no acoustic work.
Right, right.
Because they said, no, we have to save money. Don't worry, no people
There's
around.
There's no one around.
Exactly.
Mm.
That was the big problem.
Okay. So now if we move to the history of acoustics, and I guess specifically noise control, you've done a lot of research in this area, and I'm interested in how far does that history go back in terms of say the noise control in buildings, as well as the noise control or the response to environmental noise and community noise. How far do we go back, and what are the historical records that we've got of interventions there?
Yeah, specifically in Australia, I found some evidence, some records, written records. It's about 1926 through 1928.
Yeah.
And in 1928, Thomas Levy, the physician, he was working in Melbourne for the 3LO radio.
Radio station.
Radio station. Yep. Because he and his team, they studied the long wave transmission of the radio waves.
Yeah.
Perhaps of that, they had to study the sound waves, because back in 1928, nobody knows nothing about the the oscillation. He took the opportunity to measure the street noises in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And the tram noises and everything. And he discovered a new field. And it is weird and it is kind of crazy for me because it doesn't in officially, I mean, in there is not records at a University of Melbourne of his work. I found,
interesting.
Yeah, okay. And also in his obituaries. The obituaries don't mention anything about his research.
Wow.
So in 1928, 3LO radio station, they were interested also to communicate the noise problem.
Yeah.
And in the simultaneously, when Thomas Labby was measuring the noise, they put the same microphone, they transmitted the noise by radio. Yes.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. The same question Marion Burgess asked me.
Yeah.
Why? Why you need to... I have a possible answer. I think it was innovation in 1928, the microphones and how to transmit the sounds.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of a journalist interest to the whole country.
Playing with their new toys.
Yes.
and I've seen some of this because there's some records of it and there's some actual sort of, I guess, noise logging sort of results from the streets of Melbourne in the 1920s, which I found astonishing that that exists.
I mean, is that
early in terms of the rest of the world? Is the like
no at the same moment?
Yeah.
But it exists one original work of Labby and his team. Because in United States, mostly in 1928, they used audio meters to measure the sound level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not exactly the new metric, but they use sound units. It's an old metric, but
okay.
The question is, the rest of the world, they use audio meters. But Labby, no, he developed with his team a specific network to measure the sound level flat. In 1928,
okay.
Is incredible. But the second reason that Labby and his team they did an astonished work and research. They record the sound levels every second using a clockwork and a stylus for a seismic measure.
Right, like a pen stylus with a...
Exactly.
Wow.
It was the first time in the world because in United States, the Bell Company was concentrated in how to measure how the people could hear the noises.
Yeah.
Hear the sound.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't interested in the real sound level.
Yeah.
The real sound level.
Yeah.
Labby did that in 1920.
It's an amazing. We might be able to find a link for people, but it's amazing to see these logged noise levels from Melbourne in the 1920s. It's astonishing to me.
Mm-hmm. He made, after his research, he made some conclusion and also some recommendation for the tram company. But it's documented.
Yeah, right, wow. Mm-hmm. So thinking more broadly in terms of the history of noise control, how early were... I know there's... I've heard of Roman carts with leather on the wheels to Is this sort of...
No, for me, as a historian, that situation is kind of legend. It's a poetic way to see. But there are many records and evidence of early ways to understand, not to how to control it, because yeah. how to control it, the government or the authorities, they need a specific law. And the first evidence of that kind of ordinance, it exists in one Greek community in Italy around 600 BC.
600 BC?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is the first evidence. I could trace the original original writing, and because of that, Marion Burgess, yeah. She helped me to contact to Greek acoustician, because you need to translate the original Greek writing to actual English. And yeah. they were surprised, because, Walter, sometimes we read about this ordinance, but we didn't know the original source.
Yeah.
But the oldest reference about a noise problem in urban cities, obviously it exists since the handwriting. It's the cuneiform form from the Middle East around 2500 BC.
2500 BC.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's written. It is for historian. Is also a discover this reference, because in one paragraph the poem of Gilgamesh is the 11th poem of Gilgamesh, and it says the poem says. Because of the people, the noise in the cities made by the people, and that noise during the night, the gods and the goddess, they couldn't sleep and they couldn't rest in the night. So they punished humanity sending a flooding.
Wow.
And it seems that the great flooding it mentioned in the Bible, on yeah. the Old Testament, it reminds that poem back to 2500 BC.
Gilgamesh, and that's it's an escalation of a noise complaint.
Yeah, yes.
By the gods.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's something. I guess you've looked at noise control and I guess noise control activism over 2,500 years. Are there common threads about who drives, who are the parties that are driving changes to how we control noise? Is it always the regulators? Is it always the government? Or is it the community? Or is it the experts or the acoustic fraternity that's driving
no,
things?
No, as far as I could research, the pressure, the authorities and the government, they were pressured by the people,
yeah.
by the regular and common people. Mm. They were aware of the noise problem which affect their health. And in order to find an explanation, they put in contact with a specialist.
Yeah.
And after that, they work interdisciplinary. They work together.
Yeah.
And I could trace the first evidence of a noise complaint in Australia is from Sydney. It's about 1846.
Really?
Yes.
And what was it about? What was the nature of the complaint?
It's not kind of complaint. It's most kind of a solution because I don't remember exactly the beach outside Sydney, but perhaps now it's inside Sydney area. Yeah. And the advertisers say, if you want to rest properly with no noise during your holidays, you have to go to that blah blah beach.
Ah,
I'll send you the copy of that. So when I share that advertising with Marion, she said, Walter, you are crazy. It's impossible to find this information. Because an indirect way to complain about the noise.
Yeah. Because by saying that here's a quiet beach to get your restful holiday, you're saying it's noisy in the city where you live and you need to get away from it. One other just tidbit of acoustic history, and you may be able to shed some light on whether this is true or not, but I've heard that Edison was looking at noise from elevated steam railways in New York or Brooklyn somewhere, and he had this idea that you could trap the noise from the railways and export it out onto to boats and store it up.
Yes, it was 1878.
Yeah.
It was a couple of months after Edison patented his phonograph recording system.
Yeah.
So the people, they present at the judges to the complaints, so the authority and the judges called to Edison to say, okay, you have to find one way to diminish the noise, and in case you can eliminate.
Yeah.
So it exists one of the that first noise recording is back 1878, and it's kind of legend because you can't find any formal statement, but it exists in some newspaper. I have two newspapers that the person and the journalist say it's kind of legend. We have to take care, be carefully about this. But they say Edison is in a way to find a system how to can the noise, and threw away because he thought it's a legend. Because he thought if I can record the sound level and put on a can, because the cylinder back day they named it Canon.
Canon noise, canon
sound. The legend is that Edison realized if I can record the sound level, in some way I can keep the sound noise, the waves, and put it through away. It's a legend, but it exists.
It's a nice story.
Yeah.
The last piece of your work that I wanted to talk about was as your work as a member of the Archives and History Committee of the Acoustic Society of America. Yes. And you're involved in investigating and documenting the lives of the 32 original founders of the Acoustical Society of America, is that right?
The founders are 40 people.
Okay.
For the acoustician community, I mean, six of them are well-known. Fletcher, Knudsen, Waterford, Watson. But there are other lesser-known. So back in 2021, I was part of that committee in Archive and History. I started to research and investigate the other people.
Mm.
And it was interesting because until now, nobody at the age say they didn't have. I don't mean they don't have the opportunity to think about, but they didn't realize. Okay, there are more people who is responsible to the creation of the ASA. Elaine Moran, she is ASA board since 1970. And she wrote me, Walter, it's amazing your work, because I could live with the last year of the some of the ASA founder, the well-known, with Fletcher and Knudsen, but I didn't take care about the lives of the others. Founders. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I found a really interesting history about the rest of them. It's 32. I could find records, but the other two, they it's impossible to find, because they were representatives, sailors. They were sailors, no acoustician.
Oh, okay.
So they were part of a company who sell acoustic products back in
1938. Acoustic products, that would be interesting in itself.
So just we have just the name and the surname, but nobody else.
And so what is the output of that investigation? Is that is there a document somewhere, or is there something on the website that...
Nothing exists.
Okay.
No, I have to research one by one, digging in all archives, crossing worlds. I could find scarce information, and perhaps I can find one isolated mention of that. Well, I have to investigate. It took me 2 years, and so I wrote to many university, to many communities, and finally I have to. I didn't want. But I have to pay this company that you can search in prepaid searching in newspaper. So I could find so many social information about when they get married. It was for me. The old LinkedIn, the newspaper.
Oh yes, right. The LinkedIn at the time.
The LinkedIn. Also the old Facebook, because some people came to the town after he works at the ASA meeting.
Yeah,
it's important. It was interesting.
Very
the journey.
Information.
And now I have. One folder for each founder, and I don't know, perhaps 1,000 of digital archives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's staggering to think of trying to find information that far back, because, you know, I know from the Australian perspective, the AAS and the AAAC are both sort of 40 or 50 years old, and trying to find information on the founding members of those organisations is hard, let alone going back, you know, 80 or 90 years. That's another challenge, step challenge.
Yeah.
I guess as we sort of finish up, what is the, I mean, you've done a lot of different things now. What is it that you're working on now or next, or what are you still interested in that that is the current road you're going down in acoustics?
Nowadays I'm focused and work in low frequency issues.
Yep.
To suggest and to propose one plausible and possible metrics I will present during the meeting.
Yes,
the
ASA mm-hmm. conference, yeah. joint conference in Sydney with the AAS
yes,
mm-hmm. in December of 2023. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you've got a paper, what's your paper on for the conference?
Yes, I'll present two papers. One of them is about proposing one metric, but it's kind of prognosis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't discuss internationally yet,
yep.
but Norm Bronner,
yep.
He's our, but I didn't have the opportunity to discuss with him face to face. And the other paper is more to show the noise survey in two cities in South America, Lima and Montevideo, Uruguay. Okay. How easily is to reach a misconception about urban noise measurement when you don't take care about the low frequency noise
content.
Energy content.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm, interesting.
But the history and the history of science is kind of a side shot.
Side hustle.
Yeah.
And where can people find out more about your work? Where would they be
best
to?
All are free in my ORCID. I will share you the
yeah,
link.
Yeah, we'll put the links in the show notes, so people can
and
find those.
All is free. Yep. It's 50-50. 50 are in English and the rest are in Spanish. I don't know, perhaps say when I have some free time, I started to write my article in Spanish in two columns, Spanish and English. In a way not to lose the feeling of the original language, because last week I did a challenge. I took a challenge from the Spaniard Acoustical Society. They asked me, okay, Walter, it's okay for you, but now you have to write about the history of the acoustic in Spain. And I could trace the one of the beginning is back 13th centuries. But this is another history.
Well, Walter, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.